Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
A first in this episode, as host Lewis Irons, head of coach education Greg Patterson, and international mindset specialist Steve Salas all join each other remotely amid the coronavirus crisis.
Greg, Steve, thank you very much for joining me. This is certainly a first. This is a new territory for us, Greg, on the podcast, recording in this manner. But nothing's going to stop us, not even this coronavirus. Here we are for some more Coach Ed podcasts.
Yeah, it's good to be here again, Lewis, albeit that we're in separate venues. It's always good, I think, to get round a table and get chatting to our guests. But this time, as you say, is a little bit different. We're in three or four different venues. So, as you say, we'll crack on. I'm looking forward to it.
And before we hear from the man himself, the reason we are on this podcast again, and Steve, thanks for joining us. But I'm going to go to you first, Greg, to introduce our guest in a glowing manner, which you always do, and give a bit of background to those listening in about all about Steve.
Well, the background was probably via Russell Martin. Russell started on our pro licence last January, and Russell, I think, had a history with Steve, and Steve can probably tell us a little bit more about that. But Russell spoke very highly of Steve and perhaps the work that he could do for us in coach education. Now, me being me, took an age to get even in touch with Steve, a few emails back and forward, as these things normally do. And then eventually we got an agreement, a few long chats with Steve and the work that he does. And he'll speak better about that than I will. But we decided that the best place, the best fit would be for Steve to come up and chat to our A-licence group, which was meant to be a couple of weeks ago. Now, unfortunately, that fell by the wayside because of coronavirus as well. But thankfully, Steve was still giving of his time. He had committed to that travel and that day up to be with us. So we came up and we did something with a smaller group, a smaller staff group that we were permitted to do under the circumstances, rather than working with the 60 or 70 that might have been together on the A-licence. So we spent a fantastic day with Steve, people like myself, Andy Gould, Stuart McLaren, Doogie Anderson, Richie Wilson, Danny Bislin from Club Development came along. So we had a great day. Fraser Stewart, that's been on this podcast before. So we had a great day with staff and thinking about how we might develop things around coach education. And Steve was very, I suppose, a very fruitful day in the way in which he helped steer us in different directions and what we might be able to use in the future. So then I suppose out of that, this idea was born that let's get Steve back on a podcast so that A-licence group can still hear some of what he's done. But not only the A-licence group, we could then release this hopefully to the wider public thereafter.
Yeah, brilliant. And Steve, I know we're in uncertain times at the minute. We were talking, of course, about how everyone's been affected, but from your work as well, I'm sure that's going through kind of testing times as well. How are you getting through things at the minute?
Yeah, gentlemen, firstly, thank you for having me. And it's really, you know, a genuine pleasure to be supporting, as I said to Greg, well, my Scottish mother's very happy right now. Obviously, I never thought I would have an opportunity to work and support, you know, people north of the border. So thanks for having me. Now, regards to your question, I think everybody's having a bit of a bit of a wobble at the moment about the uncertainty. And obviously, me and you have just spoke off air about gratitude. And I think we might talk about gratitude later in the podcast today. There's people out there, right, that are far worse off than you and I. And I think that actually that type of thinking is probably the type of thinking that we need to implement in the football industry, is that a lot of us can possibly moan about what we haven't got, but actually I think gratitude about what we have got. And so, for example, yeah, business has been tough. I've lost a lot of jobs, but, you know, my mindset for that is it's just try and stay calm and look at the opportunities rather than the threats. So, gents, thanks for having me. And, I'm looking forward to our discussions.
Yeah, as am I. I think I speak on you and I's behalf here, Greg, when I say it's
Delighted that Steve's come up. And, you know, as I said earlier, when we were having the conversations about what to do together, how to move forward with things after Russell's recommendation, I suppose first and foremost, he's written a book called Educating Football. But thereafter, you know, those discussions I did have, I think I said to the group that we worked with last week with Steve that I had to go for either a long walk with the dog afterwards or stick my head in the fridge. The guys just get that much knowledge to impart, and I'm sure that will come across today.
Yeah,
and I think, go on.
I know, I was going to say, you know, considering the work you've done, I'm sure it's you. Do you find it easier putting all your thoughts and your expertise down into paper and when you're writing a book, or do you prefer getting involved in things like this when you're presenting to people on ProLicense courses and stuff like that?
Do you know what, guys? I think this is a really important topic, and it's something that I mentioned in the book and posted actually on social media this week about what intelligence is and what it isn't. I really struggled at school. I was an academy footballer at Brighton Hove Albion from 11 all out to 19. So football was a big part of my life, and academia definitely wasn't. I was in mid to bottom sets at school and found learning very difficult, and I always had a real love for writing. I wasn't very, very good at it, but I loved my English teacher. She was really inspirational. So I think that the book came about really through when I finished my master's degree. My master's degree was in educational psychology and leadership. Now, I know I've just described going from mid to bottom sets to getting a master's degree, but that's a 20-year journey later on. But I think that the book came about with me leaving education. So your listeners are aware, when I got released from Brighton, I went to university at Greenwich, which is in London. I then did 4 placements on my degree. And all of those schools were all crazy inner London comprehensives. And I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but they were lively, lively places. So anyone that, you know, Rio Ferdinand was at the school. It wasn't there when I was teaching there. Junior Stanislas, Michael Turner. You know, the district that we're in, you know, has produced Joe Gomez, Casey Palmer. You know, it was a hotbed of football. But that's neither here nor there. My experiences were so diverse. And that led from, I was a PE teacher, and that led to being a vice principal. So really, the vice principal job finished. My master's degree finished at the same time. And then, to cut a long story short, an ex-pupil texted me. And, you know, there's this myth that teachers are supposed to help students, right? But actually, this student changed my life. And his name's Chris Ether. He loves me mentioning him in all the podcasts. He's a 32-year-old man now. But he texted me and said there's an academy management job going at Millwall, headed up with the education. So, obviously, I have my teaching degree. I had loads of leadership experience. So really, me leaving education 6 years ago was a real off-the-cuff moment, a real life-changer. And obviously leaving there to go back into professional football, which I never thought I'd go back into, was really the inspiration for writing the book. So I know that's a long-winded story, but I think it's important that your listeners know that my real background is, you know, failed footballer, as I call myself, into education and then back out into business.
It's a fascinating story, and it's great hearing it from you yourself, Steve. I mean, when I was looking ahead to this podcast, you know, everything, your background, and obviously has formed large parts of this book. But this book and all the work you're doing now is taking you on a different branch, if you like, in the footballing world. And some, I'm sure you've got some valuable experiences that you've learned on this side of producing that, you know, bit of work.
Yeah, I think, like I say it in the first chat. I mean, I gave all the boys a gift as a book. So I'm hoping some of them have even just read the introduction. And I talk very confidently about football, the 11v11 part, the bit that most people know about. And what I question in the football industry is the 11v11 bit has not really changed that much in 60 years, 70 years, 80 years. But what has changed is leadership, soft skills, emotional intelligence, sports psych, you know, sports science, and all of these external variables that pro-licensed coaches, if they haven't got the tools, they have 2 choices, either learn those tools or go and find someone else that has those tools. So I think it's important, again, we try and hook this back into our listeners. And I have a big saying, it's not what we say, it's what they want to hear. And therefore, I'm going to challenge the pro-licence and the A-licence coaches with, you know, how effective is your toolbox and how many tools have you got to be effective, not with the coaching aspect, but with all the much more strategic aspects. And I suppose, again, as a vice principal in a London secondary school with 2,500 kids and 300 teachers that all need line management responsibilities, et cetera, how does that look on an operational level? And the biggest gap that I've seen in football is that everyone keeps talking about football, but they don't talk about how we learn about football. And I don't know. I'm very passionate about the gaps that I see in the football industry. And all I'm trying to do, gentlemen, all I'm trying to do is just help people.
That's what grabbed me the most when I got chatting to Steve. You know, I think about, you know, trying to implement coach education course curriculums to the masses, if you like. But you know, the way Steve just described that there, I like the way Steve think. To me, it's critical thinking. It's getting these coaches to become thinkers, not just, you know, we've got to cover 4 hours on psychology and 4 hours on leadership and 6 hours on sports science and whatever else during that UFIA licence course. But I think I like the way Steve puts that there. I think that's about us and Steve working together with Steve, trying to create critical thinkers. You know, why are we showing them that element of sports science? Why are we showing them that element of leadership? How can they then use that? Is it good enough for them? Can they tweak it? You know, so as Steve rightly described there, it's about adding to that toolbox for the coach.
Yeah, that must be a hugely rewarding thing, Steve, as well, when you are speaking to these aspiring coaches and you obviously engage in that conversation, get their thoughts, but more importantly, encourage them to think a little bit differently, perhaps, or encourage them to think in different ways as they progress as coaches.
Right, well, I think this is really an interesting point, right? We've all sat in an auditorium or a room or a conference centre or a classroom. Well, I think we all have. I'm not assuming here. And someone's been sat there. They've done two things. They've either done death by PowerPoint, which is a UK, you know, mocking term about how people deliver, and they just bore you to death with PowerPoints. Or the other alternative is they tell you their lens and how they see the world, and they tell you how to coach like this and teach like this. And then you're sitting there and you're going, well, that doesn't relate to my environment, my cohort, my community, my players. And then already you're almost on the back foot with, you're losing engagement. And I've literally sat in, you know, and teacher training for 20 years. And I suppose that when I built my business and I wrote my book, I was so confident, not with how my business or book would be successful or not. I was just confident in what do people want to hear. They don't want to hear how to be told what to do. I don't believe anyone wants to be told what to do. And if you go back a step to people influence, so this is to the pro license coaches, you know, not what you say, what people hear. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. Sometimes we're still missing a massive trick. People influence, player influence is so much deeper than people realise. You know, like a strategic message. You know, a manager, a coach, an assistant, they sit in the training ground 8:30 and they talk about the overloads, they talk about the 8v8, but they don't talk about the intricacies of detail about, okay, how are the lads feeling today? What do they need to hear? Who's going to speak? When are we going to speak? Is it going to be less is more today, or do we need to overload with teaching and learning today? How does this link to sports science, et cetera, et cetera? So really, what I'm trying to get at in summary is questions rather than answers. And I think that most people that work with me in the pro football industry know that I'm probably more of a questions man than an answers man, because it's very difficult to have the answers for players that you don't know, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a fascinating point that you make, Steve, because Greg, I'm going to come to you on this. It's not just what you're saying or what you're delivering when it's in any walk of life, or particularly with coaches, but it's how you say it as well. And I'm sure that's something that probably a lot of people don't actually appreciate when they think about what coaches actually have to learn and process.
It's all about context for me, Lewis. And, you know, I think maybe what Steve's alluding to there is that you don't know that person's context until you're in there and you're living and you're breathing it, and you know the intricacies of what's happening at that club. You know, it's all, you know, I think just about, you know, the common guy, if you like, that reads the newspaper story or listens to the phone in, and they kind of make up their minds about what's happening in that club without truly knowing the context behind things, without truly knowing the conversations that are happening, as Steve rightly says, between the head coach and his coaching staff, between the coaching staff and the player, between the head coach and the boardroom, between the head coach and the press, all those different relationships and everything else that goes on within that environment, that all comes down at the end of the day for me is context. You know, are they in the middle of a bad run of results? So are they in the middle of a good run of results? You know, you just don't know what's the club's what's the club's philosophy and ethos? Is it just to stay up? Is it to qualify for Europe? So you've just got so many different contexts, circumstances going on that I think Steve's right. You don't have a one size fits all solution when it comes to theory.
No, I was just thinking about what Greg was saying about critical thinking and higher order thinking. Now we haven't got time to really delve into that today, but I urge people to do some more analysis on it. Now in my book, I it's really important that I said this to when I delivered to the coaches I was mentioning just about. I just lost my train of thought. I was just mentioning about the real importance of making sure that we always the end line is people influence, right? Not what we say, what we hear. What needs to be delivered today? When people are sitting in an audience, what do they want to hear today? Even the headspace, you know, the details around the day of the week, the details around the time of the day, and the higher order thinking and the stuff that really I mentioned in the book is based around the concept called metacognition. Now, I don't want the coaches to get weirded out by posh words because, you know, my job is to make them eat it for breakfast. But metacognition changed my life. It changed my life as a leader. It changed my life as a son. It changed my life as a friend. And it has two meanings. Meaning one of metacognition is the task I gave to the Scottish boys, which was, how do you know that you know something? Now, Greg, when we discuss that, here's a question to you now. How do we know that we know? We had about 9 to 10 concepts from the cohort of staff, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And I gave the staff about 5 to 10 minutes to think. Now, I'm not going to give any answers because here's a question for the people that are listening. Question to everyone is, how do you know that you know something? Now, if the people listening now are sitting there going, oh, my God, what is that? Then I'm already winning because my job is to make you think. It is not to tell you what to do. You have to have as many tools in your toolbox as humanly possible, and you need to choose the right tool for the right player at the right time with the right strategy at the right moment of the day to make sure that you're making and maximizing the best of your ability. And the second meaning to metacognition is thinking about being a better thinker. Now, people are probably sitting there again going, bloody hell, what does that mean? Just take some time to think about the concept, knowing about knowing and thinking about thinking.
It's got me thinking already. It's got Mark kind of just his phone.
I'm panicking here, Lewis. I'm quickly hurrying through my notes that I made from Steve with us a couple of weeks ago, just in case you ask me anything.
I knew you had Greg scrambling there, Steve.
Brilliant.
Listen, I could go on all day with this. I'm sure you could as well, Greg. Digging into it a bit deeper, going into things a bit further. But with the purpose of, when we think about the coaches that will be listening to this, we're going to break it down into three kind of points, and we'll start, Steve, with character versus calibre and the messages you've got around that.
Yeah, so I gave the staff, again, some higher order thinking questions, so very lighthearted, nothing really heavy. And I said to them, what's more important for a coach's success or a first team manager and the player, so it was separated into two strands, the character of a player or the caliber of a player. So what's going to make them more successful, the character of a coach or the caliber of a coach? Now, when we're looking at character development and then we're looking at caliber, and caliber meaning someone's skills, what do we think we're getting created? So, Greg, this is back to you. I can't remember on the day what you said or what your pair said was most important, because you were working with Danny at the time, weren't you? What did you two go for, if you can remember?
We decided we'd a split in the camp. It was interesting, Steve, because you had three groups, and I think one group went for character, another group went for calibre, and the third group, I think, were split 50-50 right down the middle. So it was incredible to listen to each group's take on that and exactly their argument as to why it would be character, or indeed why it would be calibre. And I think used the analogy of, you know, the maverick player. Would you have that team of mavericks who would probably be more aligned with, you know, a character rather than, you know, those kind of steady eddies who might be more aligned with the calibre?
And that's a really good point. I think it's important. I'll go back a little bit of a step for the listeners here, right? So I've got, this is me selling my business a little bit here, but it's not, right? So let's just get this. My business has got four main concepts. It's got the lens. And what do I mean by the lens? Now, in the training, I gave everybody an opportunity to look at the same slide, Lewis, right? And I gave them 10 seconds to count the letter F, right, in the slide. Now, there was 9 people in that room, and 8 of them saw a different number, right? And everyone's laughing and cracking up and going, oh, my God, how can you see this and I see this and how can you see that and I see that? I then doubled the time and gave them another opportunity, and the second time, 7 of them have still got it wrong. The third time, 6 of them still got it wrong. Now, the reason I'm saying this, linking to character and caliber, is that I don't see the world, Steve Salas, how you see the world. I don't see the world how Greg sees the world. I don't see the world how Fraser sees the world. I don't see the world how Andy Gould sees the world. And therefore, a coach doesn't see the game the same as a player sees the game. So unless we create alignment, and a lot of my work in professional football clubs is around alignment. How can we connect how Greg sees the world and how I see the world and how you see the world, Lewis, and make sure we are so synchronized and so on the same page, we are absolutely going to nail our football strategy and how that looks on the pitch, how it looks in position, how it looks out of position, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I don't want to get too complex because I don't want to make this war and peace, this podcast, but the lens is a massive, massive element to the work that I do. And therefore, Greg mentioned that out of the 3 groups that I gave that task to, character or caliber, every group saw something different. Therefore, when coaches go and deliver a 4-3-3 versus a 4-4-2, the players may see something different. And that's the type of real work that we really need to be doing with the coaches. It's not what you say, it's what the players hear. So I hope that made sense. I mean, it's quite a difficult thing to explain without any visuals. But yeah, that was really it. Greg, anything on that?
No, I think you're right. It's a difficult one to explain, but you know, perhaps just for the coaches there, it's the analogy that you used. If I'm picking it up right, Stephen, it's you know, would you rather work with a team of mavericks who are that who give you more character, or would you rather work with the team of players who give you the 7 out of 10 performance every week and they're never in bother? But you know, you'll never get a spark of genius perhaps from them at the same time either, who perhaps give you that caliber. That they've all got good caliber of players. So I think that's where that discussion comes in. What do we actually look for, and what do we want in a player? Is it the character or is it the caliber?
I think, yeah, that's a good point. And it's important for the listeners to know this as well. When I went into Millwall, because this is what evolved in the conversations that we had. And remember, I'm here to deliver to the coaches, but it was very informal and it was much more collaborative than me just telling people what to do. But I was sharing my experiences of the difficult characters that were in the building at Millwall when I joined. And that's nothing against the club, of course, but it was just that's the way it was, the 18s and the 23s. And at the time, we didn't have the staff with the experience to mentor these rough diamonds. And we had about 80-20. I don't know if your coaches have heard of the 80-20 effect, right? It's a good business term. And we had about 80% of players that were tricky characters. Now, from a school experiences, I couldn't get my head around it. I said to the lads at Millwall, boys, not being rude to you, but this is the only industry I've ever known where you handpick every kid, like i.e. the football club handpicks the kids, and then you're moaning about their conduct and their behaviour. Now, as a school, I've got 2,500 kids in my building. I'm not allowed to handpick. I get what I'm given. And over 5 years, I've got to add value to this cohort, right? There is no negotiation. I've got to make you, and you've got to make you better over 5 years. So I suppose then going from that to 18 new team players, where you can pick any kid you want in the world. Let's pretty much say it, because the game's global now. And then you're picking dysfunctional people. Forget the player. Forget that entirely. You're picking dysfunctional people. Like, what are you doing? So it was almost like, lads, I said, I've gone from dealing with crap all day at school to then dealing with the same crap in a football building. And it was almost like, come on, liven up. We don't have to accept this. We don't have to accept football banter going wrong. We don't have to accept footballers not being academics. We don't have to accept this, and this. And I'm not, so we're clear, I'm not saying footballers have all got to be intelligent academics. I'm not saying that. But I don't know anyone in the building that I've worked with that says a good character cannot maximise performance. You know, I don't know. What would you go for, Lewis? Character or calibre?
Well, it's an interesting one when you pitch that to me, Steve, because my head kind of goes to, you really will find out the real character of a player or a squad when maybe times get a little bit harder, or maybe you're going through slight hardship, and that's when character could be so crucial. But then calibre can apply in different times, and you know, Greg's touched on it there as well. But my gut would have told me that character is the big thing about the person you're dealing with, because effectively you are dealing with people at the end of the day. That would be my gut, but I mean, I'm not anywhere near an expert, but that's where my head immediately went with it.
Yeah, and I think, again, the calibre bit comes in, and I was talking about the journey and how you know, not it wasn't me, it was we, how we just went to better kids. We just signed better kids. Now, once you've then got that embedded, so it's important for the pro-licensed guys and the A-licensed guys to listen to this, about strategy. What I learned from being a school leader was strategic and operational balance. So let's apply that for football. Strategy, your long-term planning for your in-possession, out-possession. What's your team DNA wanted to look like? What are your key performance indicators? How are you going to measure learning? How are you going to, obviously, results is one thing, blah, blah, blah. And then how does that strategy look on the training ground? How does that strategy look around, you know, at dinner? How does that strategy look on an operational level on the pitch? How does that strategy look on an operational level in the gym with a sports scientist? So the key that I see the gap in the football market is these pro licensed coaches, a lot of them are missing a massive trick with genuine leadership toolbox. Not that some haven't got that, because I don't want to label people that I don't know. But I mean, even in the UK, you know, even in the English game, the reason a lot of coaches are failing is because their knowledge about football is unbelievable. But as I said in the book, they don't know about leadership, soft skills, emotional intelligence, sports psych, strategy, operation, how we measure learning, how we conduct process, blah, blah, blah. So I think that when you've got that embedded strategically, in the medium term, you can then start taking some mavericks, is basically what we discussed.
Yeah. That's fascinating. We could, Greg, I'm sure you'd agree, we could probably keep going through these points. And I would like to try and cover a few, but have you got anything you want to add to that before we maybe move on to another branch?
No, I don't. I just, as you say, I just find it fascinating. I think it's just one that, you know, whether it's people doing more research, or I'm not trying to plug Steve's book here, but I'm going to plug it anyway, or whether it's reading the book, or, you know, and them delving into it that little bit further themselves. You know, this, let's be honest, at this juncture, this podcast is serving two purposes. One, that it is a podcast, but two, that, you know, it's going to our A-licensed coaches so that they can delve into that thinking and provide an assignment on it. So, you know, we're serving those two purposes, and I think we've maybe touched on things enough to allow people to go away and reflect and think on that one.
No, brilliant. Well, I will say, Steve, while we're on that Greg is very good at flogging your book. He was selling it to me on all sorts last night, so I'm going to be getting on that soon enough, don't you worry.
Right, boys, if you keep going, I'm going to get a tattoo of a Scottish flag.
My mum would be happy, Steve. She would be delighted.
Yeah, she'd be buzzing, yeah. My mum's proper. My mum loves it.
And we'll move on now, guys, to the next point that we spoke about, and it's prove versus improve. Steve, where do we go with that one?
Well, I mean, I would love to chuck this to Greg, but I don't want to put him on the spot early doors or give him some time to think about it. I mean, this, if I'm honest, I had, who was I speaking to yesterday? I was speaking to someone in the football industry yesterday. I can't think who it was. Anyway, so I have one regret in my book, that I didn't explain the prove or improve in greater level. That's a massive regret of mine. Now, my book is 39 short, sharp chapters, so I haven't really gone into in-depth on anything. And the reason I haven't is because most people don't read these days. We're on our phones. So I've designed the book with 39 chapters, which you can read every chapter in about 5 minutes. I think the maximum pages is 8 pages in a chapter. Most pages
most chapters, about five. So let me explain the prove or improve. I'm going to say this to the coaches that are listening. What is more important for a player, to prove yourself or to improve yourself? What is more important for coach, first team manager, assistant manager, to prove yourself or to improve yourself? Now, just to give some a pedagogical aspect to it and a theoretical aspect, this is the work that I studied from a master's degree. You won't see this written in any book. This is the stuff that I did and evolved and changed and pilot studied. And it's all from the work of Carol Dweck, which is all the growth mindset stuff. And I've got a bit of beer in my bonnet, really, with the growth mindset stuff, because you go on Twitter and everyone just bangs on about it, but people don't really understand what growth mindset is properly. And if you say to a 15-year-old kid from South London that I have a growth mindset, they'll say, shut up, what you're talking about. So to the side of the growth mindset, I want people to look up meta-learning, which is all the learning to learn stuff. So let me just, this is going to be quite heavy, but people stay with me. Instead of teaching about football, we need to start teaching how we learn about football. In a school context, instead of teaching about maths, we need to start teaching how we learn about maths. Instead of teaching about science and English, it's how we learn about science and English. So bringing the learning process back a step so the kids can access, the players can access exactly what you're talking about. And I suppose, again, what really winds me up a little bit in the football industry is that obviously I get teachered off quite a lot. You know, oh, he's just a teacher. He wasn't a player. He didn't play league games. You know, you get all of that stuff. Now, firstly, I was obviously at a professional club for all that time. But I said to the lads, you know, my godfather's a guy called Teddy Maybank. Played for Chelsea, Fulham, Brighton, PSV Eindhoven. I was brought up in the football industry. So I think that, again, these concepts that I'm talking about, I picked them up from school and I put them into Millwall, and yes, it was abstract. Yes, it was different, but I'm not going to apologise for being and pushing the boundaries in the game, because I think that there's still the same behaviours have been going on for far too many years. And I think that, yeah, my job again is to make people think. So over to you, Greg. When we said prove or improve, can you remember what was discussed?
Can I remember what was discussed? No, I'll be honest. No, there was probably too much in a day. But I think we're in a fascinating time of life just now, given the situation we're all in with this damn coronavirus. I think coaches at this point in time have no option. They can't prove themselves, really, because they're not out on the coaching pitch. They can't prove themselves because they're not competing against other people. But are they truly trying to now improve themselves? Are they invested in being lifelong learners so that every day they're getting up, they're reading, they're listening to podcasts, they're doing whatever at all they can to try and improve themselves during this period of time, which might then actually help them prove themselves once football opens up again?
And do you know what? What a spot on, you know, you've explained it much better than I have. I think again, you know, when I'm mentioning in the book about this concept, I don't do it in enough depth, and I can't emphasize enough. On paper, it looks like, you know, you get a degree and you get a master's. God bloody hell, it must be brainy. I'm telling the listeners, I am not brainy. But the one thing I do have in my toolbox is the ability to want to learn. And I think that I've got an X factor, weird passion. I want to learn more than anyone that I know. I want to read more and I want to know more. And that's really my main skill. Like, my main skill isn't just, you don't wake up in the morning and just be brainy, do you? You don't wake up in the morning and just go, I'm going to be a good coach. You don't wake up in the morning and have natural leadership skills. I think that I think your environment helps you. But I think if you really focus on the self-awareness aspect, you know, and again, going back to the book talks about self-awareness in the opening page. Without self-awareness, you're stuffed. You know, you have got whatever job you're in, without self-awareness, you're absolutely knackered. And self-awareness could be, let me apply this again to football. Self-awareness could be, right, these are my super strengths as a manager. These are what I excel at. Jurgen Klopp, being authentic. I don't know what he's like on a training ground. I have no clue. But I know he's super strong. Being authentic, brilliant with the media, truly cares about his players, you know, truly cares about them as people. Great new school, sophisticated leader. And in the book, before they won the Champions League, I said Klopp was the best even then, because there's something about his character that is likeable and sincere. And, you know, the guy's German and he has humour in English with the English media. If we're looking at intelligence, I can't even speak another language. And like when all these Twitter warriors are online going, yeah, rubbish manager here, rubbish manager there, rubbish manager, you're like, hold on a sec. Every single foreign manager that you're slagging off, they speak three languages or four languages. So, you know what I mean? Just, we've got to be very rational about effective sort of, you know, effective self-awareness. And we've just got to keep growing. In teaching, we talk about lifelong learning, right? So, you know, it is what it says on the tin. Just keep going through life and trying to get better.
Because that's it. That's the point I was going to make there, Steve, when you talked about your ambition and your drive to always be learning, always be, you know, reading more. And there's that, having that passion, but there's also probably having that knowledge that you're never going to know all. The game's constantly evolving. You need to, no matter what level you're at, probably always be willing to learn more and more and more, because, you know, you can never know it all.
Well, and you just nailed it. So I have a saying here, which I stole from Mike Dickinson at the English FA, an expert hires an expert. And this links into metacognition. Let me apply this for you and the listeners. How do you know that you know something? So knowing about knowing, but what about what you don't know? And do you know what you don't know? And if you are therefore aware as a leader, like my blind spots are this, this, and this, you then go and employ somebody that can do that. And you go and get the best person available. And if managers were able to take out the ego, and in the book, I talk about zooming in and zooming out. All of us at times in life, we get sucked into zooming in. You know, narrow thinking, narrow being, narrow knowing, narrow behaviour. We get on bandwagons. We listen to the wrong people. But the great leaders are able to press the pause button and just breathe and zoom out and say, am I being strategic here with my decision making? And if I'm not being strategic, can I be more strategic? Right. And then can that impact on the actual operation, on the training ground, on the grass, in and around, and an impact on learning for the players? So, you know, I don't know. I'm hoping this is making sense. It's probably not, but yeah. You know, we're only probing people to think, right?
I feel lucky in the sense that I get to, when I'm doing these podcasts, Steve, I get to sit down with guys that have this wealth of knowledge, and I'm obviously, you know, not even embarking on a coaching journey. I'm just lucky enough to be, you know, hosting this on a media sort of front. But when I absorb all this information, it's fascinating to kind of take it in with a fresh pair of eyes, if you like. And it's, for me, it's an honour to listen to it all. And Greg, I'm sure, you know, as much as you hear this on a daily basis, it doesn't get old for you either.
No, I wouldn't say it's daily at all, but I think it's that investment. And funnily enough, I've got the, again, I'm on about Steve's book, but I've got it here in front of me. I suppose that is one of the benefits of working from home during these times. And, you know, to quote from that, he's right. Without that self-awareness, he says, you have no hope. You become unconsciously incompetent. You're unable to develop, improve, and truly understand where you are and where your knowledge is at. And that, of course, prevents you then moving forward. So I think it's so important. And I'm probably similar to Steve in that I've just got this thirst to do better. I used to hide behind a bit ashamed that I used to say I wanted Scottish FA coach education to be world leading, to be world class. I used to be ashamed of that. I don't think I am any longer. In fact, I know I'm not. But, you know, we've got a great team with us at the Scottish FA, and this isn't just about talking things up. We have got a great team that I think I'll buy into that. And we'll try and make that better every single day. But that's because I think we've all got as good, as Steve says, we've all got a good self-awareness. And we're higher experts, as Steve said, every expert needs an expert. So if we're the experts in coach education, as we're meant to be, but we hire the likes of a Steve in to tell us about learning and to tell us about how people learn, so they can therefore make everything better and hopefully attain that world-class status.
And I think Greg, what you're saying is as well, you know, your ability, let's apply this again, right? I talked about zooming in and zooming out. So you've obviously had a conversation with Russell Martin without me knowing about it. He's obviously, in, you know, in a really genuine, nice way, in a sincere way to him, has said nice things about me. But you're in a headspace, because this is the sort of character that you are as well, that you're a good listener, that you want to get better, that you want to grow, you want to develop. But Greg, remember, some people are not like that. Now, I know it would be a bit weird if the coach education, you know, in charge of Scottish FA wasn't like that. So, you know, you are like that, and that's why you're in that job. But there are people that have a fixed mindset towards situations, people. There are hundreds of managers out there that hold grudges with their players. So if they're holding grudges with their players, let's be honest about it. If we're looking at millennial culture now, and millennials, and we look at the research on millennials, they're not going to have you, are they? So the reason Klopp, you know, I'll give an example. As we get older, I'm 42 now, I've got to keep evolving. My hair's getting grayer, my beard's getting grayer. You know, the kids are looking at me going, who are you, you old git? And so I've got to reinvent myself, because if I don't keep reinventing myself, the kids are going to be looking at me going, you're just this gruff Cockney bloke that keeps telling me what to do. So I've had to learn, what have I had to develop in the last 2, 3, 4 years? Probably soft skills. You know, and then again, we looked at soft skills in the training, Greg, didn't we? And can you remember, I'm killing you here, putting you on the spot. Can you remember why I said I reckon I've got better soft skills than the average coach? Can you remember what the reasons were?
There
was one main one.
No.
Yeah, it was the fact I work with women. And because, no, I mean it. Because in education, you work with women. And in football, it's so manly. It's banter-centric. When you work with women in a school, you know, or a uni where I've worked for 4 years, they don't give a shit, pardon my French. They don't care. They're not bothered. They're not bothered about banter. They just want you to be ultra professional. So again, let me apply that. You then have to communicate differently to, firstly, different genders, which is massively important in any business. But then those soft skills can still be applied to your players. That is from man to man. That gentle voice, that caring nature, that one-to-one chat, that phone call in the evening, that text saying, sorry if I upset you in training today. And that's the manager saying that to the player. You know, those details of great leadership, it's not about fear factor now and being scared. In my book, in the leadership chapter, I talk about really simple terms. Leadership, people lead through two ways. Number one, they lead through love. Number two, they lead through fear. And if Mourinho's listening to me, he leads through fear. And Mr. Klopp leads through love. Now, when Mourinho came in 2004, he was a breath of fresh air. He was the chosen one. He changed formations. He brought this freshness. But I have to say, as an outsider, and this is, again, not my opinion. Sorry, this is not fact. This is just my opinion. As an outsider, he has massively missed the millennial boat. Like, massively missed it. His ability to soften and be softer and kinder instead of being always on the back foot, always defensive, and always blaming other people. But then again, let's get away from that topic, because we're not here to bash highly successful managers. But
tying into what we were talking about, though, about, you know, the game evolving. So I get you, like you say, it might be your opinion, but it's just, you know, some examples that you can apply, I guess, at the end of the day. And we'll move on to the third point that we were going to address, and that's personality v persistence. So it probably ties in quite nicely with where we were going anyway. But let's go on to that point, Steve.
Yeah, well, the coaches have got to do a task on this, which Greg's given them. You know, what is more important for coaching success, someone's personality or someone's persistence? And what's more important for player success? Is it someone's personality or persistence? And I suppose they're going to go from, I think it was the IX model. Greg, I don't know if you know this, the TIPS. IX used to use TIPS, the acronym, which was technique, intelligence, personality and speed. I think that was IX's model. So I think, again, I'm not here to tell people what I think is right and wrong, but I just want you to, and the coaches particularly, when they get given tasks, is to think about what is going to be more important for you You know, is it going to be your personality, or is it going to be a persistence, or is it for the players, is that going to be the same? And in the book, I talk about, I think there's a chapter, let me just get it up here a sec. Here we go, The Singer, Not the Song. And in that chapter, I talk about teachers, and I do a bit of teacher bashing in the book, I can't lie. I talk about teaching in a very good way as well, but there's a lot of teachers in the system in England that are shocking, shouldn't be in the job. And there's a lot that are at X Factor, and they're brilliant, absolutely X Factor people. Coaching's no different. Being a doctor's no different. We all know that doctors, every single doctor has got a PhD, and some of them are absolutely incredible. They change lives, and some of them are rubbish. Teachers have all got a teaching degree. Every single one of them's got a teaching degree. Some of them are brilliant, and some of them are rubbish. Pro license, A license. Some of them brilliant, some of them are rubbish. So in the book, I talk about intelligence is not by a badge, it's not by a degree, it's not by a master's, it's not by a PhD. Intelligence is about your behaviour. And I broke it down into three contexts: how you act, how you interact, and how you react to scenarios. Basic social science. I'm a big social scientist. So I think that, you know, when I'm in a school, right, this used to freak me out, and I've got three teachers in the same corridor that have all been to Oxford or Cambridge University with first class degrees in their chosen subjects, and the kids are absolutely running riot in there. And this is year after year after year, and I'm thinking to myself, we've got to redefine intelligence in this country. My point being then that I said that teaching assistants, they're the lowest form of education in a teaching in a school in a building. Some of those teaching assistants are better with the kids with their eyes closed and hands tied behind their back than people with first class degrees from Oxford. So again, I'm just here to challenge the norm about personality. It's like personality is a massive, massive element. You know, Jurgen Klopp, personality. You know, Pep, personality. And I think again, I don't know, guys. What do you think, Lewis? What would you say? Who's your favourite leader?
I mean, we've spoke about him a lot. Jurgen Klopp's an easy one to talk about, but I do not just, you know, particularly hammering into one individual, but that style of individual. You know, I think about some of the modern managers at the minute that are excelling. You know, they're young, they're vibrant, they've got fresh ideas, and it's not really about what they're implementing on the pitch or off the pitch. It's about how they do it, and it's kind of, that's a big thing that's been hammered home to me. It's you spoke about that love and that care and having that soft touch, Steve, and that for me is becoming more and more apparent now with the way that society and football is developing. And I think that for me, it's that style of character. I could, you know, you could always easily go to the likes of Jurgen Klopp, but I've seen, you know, managers up here in Scotland with similar kind of approaches, young, fresh approaches that have done exceptionally well. And I see that being a huge character trait and a big, big thing that, you know, leads to success, well, specifically at the moment anyway.
Yeah. And what about you, GP?
It's interesting. I'll take you back to that one. I kind of always like to draw on my own experience. And, you know, it's interesting. I remember... I better not say who the player was. In fact, I better not even say what country he played for, but he was a well-renowned player, well-renowned international player, probably about 50 international caps. He finished his B licence with me, and he came to me at the end and he said, "You know what, Greg, I've just realised that I've not played for a good manager or a good head coach all my career. You know, the traits that they should have, the better traits they should have, the better qualities they should have through doing the course." So I think that goes back to your point about, you know, that those coaches and managers that he worked under probably had those coaching badges and probably had that assumed intelligence. But he was actually saying throughout a long career, probably a 15, 20 successful career, he said, "I've not even played for one good coach," which was just incredible.
I touch on my experiences. I mean, I dropped into non-league in the UK and I wasn't even any good in non-league, to be fair. I struggled. I played in the 90s, as we know. Pitches were rubbish. Everyone played 4-4-2. Everyone went long because the pitches were rubbish. And then you were just picking up second balls for fun. So it was guest football, you know. Now
Now we've got, what have we got now? We've got better pitches. We've got 4Gs, which allow the technicians to cope with the physicality. You know, obviously better pitches mean that, you know, you get a bit more time on your first touch, etc. We've got better coaches. There's no doubt about it that, you know, I have to say this on the record, that when I came up to see you all, the character of the staff was X factor. Everyone made me feel welcome. Everyone was open-minded. Everyone had a growth mindset. Everyone was kind. Everyone made time for me. Everyone made me feel safe. You know, it was relaxed, but it was purposeful. It wasn't serious, but at the same time, it was effective. It just had the right balance. And I think, again, the fact that the Scottish FA are zooming out and saying, do you know what? We want to make ourselves better. We want to make sure that we are giving our coaches the best possible toolbox for them to go and fulfill a career, whether that's in youth development or whether that's in senior football or whether that's abroad or whether that's based in Scotland. The game is only going to benefit with the right people around. So really, I think when the coaches listen to this podcast and they do the task, you know, it's important to recognise that these questions are designed to make you think. So don't get weirded out with, oh, I've got to have a right or wrong answer. I think that's really important for them to know.
Yeah, there is no right and wrong necessarily.
Well, I said two people can be right, remember? You know, 4 and 4 is 8, 6 and 2 is 8, and 5 and 3 is 8. So there's more than one way to be correct in coaching as well.
Well, it's fascinating, like some of the points that you've been making, Steve. For me, as I said, I've made the point earlier in the podcast about not being on the same expertise as you gents, but being able to listen to it and implement it, and I think about it from my background is obviously in media, and I've been lucky enough to work with managers of different, you know, qualities and the way that they emit themselves. And, you know, it's, I think you made the point about Jurgen Klopp earlier, Steve, about how he is with the media, how the media perceive him. And I think managers now are, certainly from my experience, starting to be more aware quite cleverly that if they are that way with the media, they actually probably get an easier time, or they get an easier run, or they have a better perception with their own supporters base. And I think that's becoming a big part of it from my side in the media that I notice. And it kind of ties into some of the points you were making about, you know, experts employing experts and having the right sort of connections around them. And Liverpool are a good example as any at the moment, how it's all going in the same direction in all elements at the club. And it's it all stems from the manager ultimately, where he has to put that in place, I guess.
Do you know what, right? You just brought up a brilliant point and given me a light bulb to discuss something. I think I wasn't a footballer, I wasn't good enough to be, but the people that I've worked with and I know that were much better footballers than me that played league football have definitely, listen, this is not every player that's played in pro football, right, that are now a coach, but generally a lot of the ex-pros have a much more less trusting view on the game. Right, what do I mean by that? The game is brutal. It's ruthless. It's ruthless if you're a manager. It's ruthless if you want to stay in a job. There's always someone trying to nick your job type mentality. Right, now, the reason I think it is like that, and I don't know the answers, this is just questions maybe for people to think about themselves, is because a lot of people in football, not everybody, again, a lot of people in football can only get a job in football, which means that when they've got that job in football, they have to hook or by crook, keep that job and kill everyone on that journey. Now, I'm not talking about Scotland or England. I'm just talking about, you know, 50 years of football culture. I hope the coaches would agree with me a little bit here at least. Like, the game is brutal and there's a lot of people just trying to nick your job or snide you around behind your back and that type of stuff. And I think, again, because I was in education for 20 years, where it's generally the complete opposite of that, you know, it's still AC20 effect again. There's still going to be the same impact. But generally, at work, you're in a real safe place. No one's trying to nick your job. We're all doing it for the kids. None of us are bloody getting paid enough money to do it, you know, for any other reason than to do it for the kids. Everyone is in it for the kids. You know, everyone's busting their socks every day to do it for the kids. So I suppose when I came from teaching into Millwall, you know, yeah, I'd been in a pro club 20 years earlier, but I couldn't believe that there was still this defensive behaviour. Oh, who's this guy? What does he know? He's only been a teacher. You know, all of the wisecracks, all of the stuff that I've got to deal with.
And I did overcome it, and you know, I made my best friends out of it. Really, I've met some unbelievable people at the club. The club are massively close to my heart, and I will always support Millwall. You know, when you're seeing lads that you helped in the first team now and working, you know, playing international football, it's there's nothing prouder. But there is definitely something in football where people have got to be on the back foot. And all I would say to the pro licensed coaches and the A licensed coaches and everyone that's listening, that just keep playing the long game. You know, because there are some good cops in football. Yeah, Chris Hughton, no one says a bad word about him. Chris Ramsey, no one says a bad word about him. You know, I can't think of others, but you don't, you know, look, there's loads of guys in football that are proper integral. They're straight as you like. They don't have to cut anyone up, and they're still being successful. And that would be the biggest bit of advice. You know, I'll give you an example, me being a business owner, I don't have a clue how to run a business apart from just be myself. The amount of people that have opened doors for me from 20 years ago, 25 years ago, even as kid, it's been incredible. It inspires me, to be honest. And I feel very grateful that people are helping me all the time.
Brilliant. Yeah, some really good points there. And it was a nice kind of branch we took on there, and an example of why we could probably keep this going all day. But I mean, Greg, those final points, while they probably weren't what we would had spoke about before, I get some really valuable stuff that the guys can definitely take on and absorb in some capacity there.
No, I think that's the beauty of definitely what I've experienced working with Steve so far, the different ways in which it would go or which it could go. And then trying to digest that almost, Lewis, and think, you know, how can I apply that? You know, Steve's given countless examples through that past kind of 55 minutes about how, you know, using that phrase all the time, how can we apply that in a football setting? And I think that's the key one. It's now for the coaches who are listening in to think, okay, how can I take that model and apply it in my setting so that I then get better? How can I then think about it that little bit deeper so that it will help my players, it will help my staff, or it will help the people that they're working with round about them, and just trying all the time to make things that bit better.
Greg, I'll tell you what we'll do to help them. I will send you on an email the RAG rating, the red, amber, green, of the leadership pro forma, and I think that'd be a really good start for them. Just so the listeners are listening, and if this goes beyond into Scotland, they can do that as well. We can post that on social media. Is green for super strengths, amber's your areas for development, and your reds your real weaknesses and your areas of development in your repertoire. And then really, as a starting point, is to just do the RAG rating on yourself, and then you almost got your own development journey sorted straight away. Because I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people in football, my experience is they want to do well. You don't meet a person in football that doesn't want to do well. Sometimes I just think they don't know how to. And if we get away a little bit from the 11v11 and start looking at leadership, I think that Scottish FA are going to be in a bloody good place, because you know, that this is the sort of detail that we need to be implementing.
Yeah, super stuff, Steve.
Steve, no, I'm sure I speak on behalf of myself and Greg when I say it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I'm a bit gutted that we obviously didn't get to do this in person, given the circumstances. But as you said at the top, Steve, you know, I just all the best from everybody at the Scottish FA and moving forward. What's your kind of, obviously we don't know how long this can last, but next kind of steps for you, Steve, what's on the horizon?
Yeah, well, I mean, from my point of view, I'm just trying to, like everyone is, anyone that's self-employed, I mean, there's 5 million of us, it says on the news, that I'm just trying to save my business. I think medium and long term, again, and this is an interesting one, because I try and treat everyone well, whether you're an old lady at a bus stop to a corporate executive. And I've had a lot of contact from a lot of people that are thinking about me. So really my next immediate term is to be healthy and well, and make sure I have the discipline to self-isolate, which some people, unfortunately, are not doing properly. And then really, you know, I'm using this as an opportunity to try and learn. I'm learning about how I do Zoom webinars. So I'm doing one for the university at Wembley next week, which will be funny because I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm putting myself in a headspace where I'm challenging myself to, you know, learn about new technology as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, all the very best moving forward, mate. It generally has been a pleasure to take even just a slight bit of that. And I know we could have kept going, as I keep on saying, but that was true. I enjoyed that.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks a lot. We'll catch up soon.
Pleasure, fellas. Look after yourself. Take care.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.